first time in his collegiate playing career is going to have to walk into an opposing stadium that's going to be packed out screaming, Boomer! Boomer! Tennessee! Not today.
Pandemonium reigns.
Tennessee gets its first top 15 road win since 2006 when they played Georgia in Athens. Eric Ainge was your quarterback. Oklahoma suffers its first double-digit loss in Norman since 2016. Vols are up to number 5 in the AP poll. Was this the biggest win in Josh Heupel's tenure at Tennessee? Thank you so much for hanging out with me. My name's Dan. This is Pandemonium Reigns. So excited to talk this game over with you. And I just want to say thank you before we get into this for spending your time with me, allowing me to tickle your ears as we talk a Tennessee victory over Oklahoma 25-15. Got a couple different ways that I want to break down this time together with you. One segment, I just want to talk about explosive plays. Another segment, I want to talk about how this game was really impacted by two plays. Really impacted by two. I'm not saying that these two plays dictated the outcome, but they were highly indicative of this game. Hope I use that word in its right context. And finally, just want to give out some game balls. Before we do all that, let's ask this question. Was this the biggest game of Josh Heupel's career at Tennessee? I mean, you all heard what he said post-game after this thing was over, and you could see in his post-game interview how much this one meant to him. He was emotional on the field. In the post-game interview, looking around, his eyes are usually fixed to the reporter. As she was getting started, his eyes were kind of looking around to see who was around him. He was obviously making contact with friends and old acquaintances that, you know, he had spent time with in Norman, Oklahoma. So this game obviously meant something to him. And I think this one was a really, really important win for him to get, with this being, you know, Oklahoma's first game in the SEC and welcoming them, so to speak, to this conference. And this is a guy who normally just does not show a lot of emotion. He usually keeps things really close to his vest. I want you to listen to some of the things that he said once this game was over. You probably heard this, but just want to highlight it for you. This game was never about me coming back here. Not for this football team. I say all that, but they also understood that this one was a little bit different for me personally, too. You're going to have to read between the lines on that one. He's not just laying it out there for you, but this one obviously meant something to him. Obviously meant something to him. And the vindication that he had to feel as Bob Stoops looks down onto the field as Tennessee has just flexed their muscles over a blue blood program of this sport. And really, Tennessee etching its name, or starting to etch its name, back into elite status of this sport. But Heupel goes on to say that's not what this is all about, but I do appreciate their recognition. He says in the locker room afterwards to his team, I appreciate you all having a little extra for me, as he is fighting the emotion that you can tell he's trying to swallow here. He says, I love you guys. I really mean that. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of how you've grown. Our best is still out in front of us. Asked where the game ball was going to go, Heupel says, it's going to go into the office for sure. If you didn't see that, Nico, actually twice, once the game ends and in the locker room, gives Coach Heupel game ball. I can't say I've ever recalled a moment where players give their coach a game ball. But good for Josh Heupel, man. What a story. Even, you know, if you're not a Tennessee fan, you have to appreciate the authenticity. You have to appreciate the genuineness, the storyline and the narrative that took place on Saturday, and how things just kind of came full circle for Josh Heupel when, you know, he gets his coaching start after winning a national championship as their quarterback, gets a coaching start in Norman, Oklahoma, right? Becomes the offensive coordinator, is relieved of his duties, to put it nicely. Flies around over the country, spends time at Utah State, at Missouri, head coach at UCF, finally, before he takes over the Tennessee job. The stars align where Oklahoma comes into this conference. Their first conference game, hosting Josh Heupel. Dude, what a storyline. Real quick, I want to end this by saying this. My wife and I have this conversation, what feels like quite often. She loves dramas and romantic comedies and stuff like that. And it drives me nuts because those dramas and the movies, they're all scripted. This is genuine. This is organic. This naturally happened. This sport literally has everything. And just props to Josh Heupel, man. So glad that he is our head coach, that he is the head coach of the University of Tennessee. You know, Michael sends me a text earlier and says basically that we've got a good one. And I respond with he's arguably more honorable than Philip Fulmer. Arguably more honorable than Philip Fulmer. If Heupel can add a title to this resume in his time at Tennessee, might go down as one of the greatest, slow down, you Neyland lovers, one of the greatest in Tennessee history. But nonetheless, let's jump into the rest of this episode. All right, so here, what I want to do is I want to talk about two plays that really, really impacted this game. I'm not saying that they necessarily determine the outcome, that if you take these plays away from this game, that you obviously have a different result because they were so impactful. And I'm not saying it changes the final outcome as far as the win-loss column, but it could arguably definitely change the narrative of the rest of the game and obviously the scoreboard. So in the second quarter, 13 minutes, 55 seconds left, we are in a 3rd-and-5 situation. Dane Davis whiffs on blitzer Robert Spears Jennings. Nico is hit on his throw. He fumbles. It is recovered by Oklahoma on the Tennessee 5-yard line. From here, this screams points on the board for Oklahoma. Until it doesn't. Until it doesn't. Arnold is going to be stripped by Joshua Josephs. It's going to be recovered by Joshua Josephs. This drive is actually going to end in a punt for Tennessee, but we totally flip the field. They get hit with a false start on first down. Next play, Jason Jenkins shoots the gap, completely untouched, safety. So let's say that that doesn't happen, that the fumble and the fumble recovery doesn't happen by Tennessee, and that Oklahoma just settles for 3. Well, because that happened, it's a 5-point swing. Let's say that doesn't happen, but Oklahoma, you know, finds a way to get into the end zone. 9-point swing. The defense. So back up for a second. Sorry. Steve Spurrier was the king of, after a turnover, chucking it deep, trying to catch the defense off guard, because that is when the defense secondary is typically flat-footed. They're not prepared to be on the field. The pass rush isn't quite there. Not this squad. They stood up, and Joshua Joseph makes a play, puts the ball back into the hands of the Tennessee offense. Yeah, sure, it ended in a punt. But Jackson Ross pins him deep. Oklahoma makes a goof. Points on the board for Tennessee. Absolute massive play that impacted the outcome of this game in Norman on Saturday. The second play, same quarter, second quarter, 5 minutes, 36 seconds left. 3rd-and-9, Dane Davis, again, he whiffs on Trace Ford. Now, in Dane Davis's defense, Trace Ford, man, he bends his hips, he dips his shoulder. His pass rush move right here, this should be in like the dictionary on how it's done. Like put this thing on film. His the way he bends his hips, man, he's looking like Mr. Fantastic out here from the Fantastic Four, making it nearly impossible for Dane Davis to block. It doesn't look like a good attempt or good effort on Dane Davis. Nonetheless, Nico is hit, fumble again, right? Recovered in Tennessee territory. Next play, Arnold drops back, or can't seem to make a decision, right? He's going through his reads, decides to settle on his check down, but it's too late. Dominic Bailey is in hot pursuit. He's coming into his face. From the opposite hash, he hits this receiver in the backfield who is on the opposite side of the numbers. I don't care who you are. It's going to be a hard throw to make. The ball is short. The ball is backwards. The ball is live. It is recovered after multiple bounces in the hands of multiple Tennessee defenders. Ends up in the hands of Jacoby Thomas by the time it's all said and done. We end up on the OU 45, 8 plays later, 8 Dylan Sampson runs later. Touchdown, Tennessee, leaving Oklahoma with, 100 seconds left to do something in a half, and they just haven't been able to. Dylan Sampson puts this offense on his back at this point. The scoring drive is all him. One play I'll give you is a speed option from Nico, but what I didn't like from Nico is the pitch was quick, and it was a little high. It was in his face mask. Whatever, it was good enough to get it into the hands of Sampson. 8 plays later, 46 or 48 yards later, touchdown Tennessee. Oklahoma started out with great field position. They were in Tennessee territory. They just didn't do anything with it. And here's where I want to take the time to say this. Jackson Arnold is not the quarterback going forward for Oklahoma. It's this Hawkins kid. He's got an it factor. He was hard to stop once they decided to make the run with him, once they pulled the trigger on Hawkins. All right. Going into half, when they decided to put Hawkins on the field, I thought this might be a chess move where, okay, we're down. Let's move some chess pieces around. Let's make Tennessee spend some time planning for something that they haven't planned for already. All right. Roll back out with Jackson Arnold in the third quarter. They didn't do it. Hawkins is the guy for them going forward, and it absolutely needs to be. But bringing this segment to a close, two plays, where the Tennessee defense doesn't get caught sleeping, fresh off of a Tennessee offensive turnover. They don't get caught sleeping. They don't get flat-footed. This front is nasty, man. Creating turnovers, putting the ball back into the hands of the Tennessee offense. Props to the Tennessee defense for winning this game for us come Saturday night. If you listen to my episode going into the game, I talked about how I thought this game was really going to be dictated by the explosive play. Who can create the explosive play? Who can limit the explosive play? Well, this fell into the favor of Tennessee. It fell into the favor of Tennessee. Statistically, I want to look at this for a moment. So let's just look at some Oklahoma stats here. So Michael Hawkins is going to be your leading passer for Oklahoma. He was 11 for 18, 132 yards, and a touchdown. QBR of 58.9, averaging 7.3 yards per completion. Jackson Arnold, less than 50% completion percentage, 7 for 16, 54 yards, one touchdown, no touchdown, one pick. I'm going to talk about that pick here in just a moment. Michael Hawkins had a run of 11 yards. Javonte Barnes had a run of 11 yards. Jaquez Padaway had a reception of 46 yard. We got caught in man coverage here. And this might have been a short cross, if I remember right. Anyway, good play designed by them, 46-yard gain. Other than that, That's it. That's really all they had. At the end of the Javonte Barnes run, he is absolutely plastered by Jacoby Thomas, which is so funny to me because all of Vol Twitter, and I'm going to dog on Vol Twitter for a second, all of Vol Twitter and Vol Nation, welcome to the SEC. Welcome to the – dude, he's an MTSU transfer. Are we really going to pretend that a school like Oklahoma doesn't play big boy football? Like, stop. That's just pure ridiculous. He's an MTSU transfer, all right? He did knock the crap out of him, though. Okay. Now, Tennessee, on the other hand, Nico was 13 for 21, 194, and a touchdown. Dylan Sampson, 24 carries, 92 yards, and a touchdown, a long of 16. Deshaun Bishop, time to put this man on scholarship, 16 for 65, 4.1 yards per play, a run long of 17. Nico had a run himself. He was total 8 for 15. He had a long of 16. Here's where we won the explosive play battle. Dante Thornton, 66-yard touchdown on what was an absolute rope from Nico Iamaliava. Nico's footwork on this passing touchdown, dude, this is elite. I remember 2010, the Music City Bowl, Tyler Bray looking off the backside safety, hitting what I believe was Derrick Rogers for a touchdown against North Carolina. I thought, oh my gosh, this freshman just looked off this safety. Holy crap, we got a quarterback going forward. Dude, this doesn't compare. Well, obviously, we all know what Tyler Bray turned out to be, but this does not even compare. Nico's footwork, his mechanics are elite. He puts this thing on a rope, and it's, I don't know if he could have handed this thing any better. It's a hair out in front of Thornton, but it's, I mean, I'm pretty sure Thornton's elbows are not locked out, so it's not that far out in front. Hits him in stride. Thornton flexes his speed, breaks down, or breaks out away from the defender, ends up towards the left sideline, touchdown, Tennessee, and then you got Brew McCoy. And then you got Brew McCoy. Brew's back, y'all. He's back. Brew looks faster than before his energy. He looks more physical than before his injury. You know what I'm saying? This is bad podcasting. Before his injury, Brew had a 42-yarder, and Brew had a 38-yarder. Big ones. Big ones. Big plays. And ultimately we were able to withhold them on the offensive side. There is a situation where Jackson Arnold throws a pick. Jermond McCoy is the one who makes the interception. They run a flood concept on the right hash. They're on the right hash. They run a flood concept. And if you're not familiar with that, a flood concept is it's basically where all your routes are one side of the field. It's an easy read for the quarterback. You're wanting zone, and you really want a cover two, and you want the cornerback, who's playing flats, to make a decision, high or low. If he plays low, throw the high route. If he plays it high, take what he gives you, throw the low route. So what happens is, ball is right hash, Burks, number six for them, is on a post, and Jermond McCoy is on the line of scrimmage pre-play, right up into his grill, but he gives him a free release. J.J. Hester is on the left side, and he is in tight. He's going to run about a 20-yard crosser. Just to the right of him is that tight end. The tight end is just going to try to chip that end. And the only other route you have is Tyler Tatum, who is coming off a play fake, slips through the flood side B gap into the flats. He is met by James Pierce, who is playing low. Gonna get into that in a second. McCoy shows low, shades high. Okay, Arnold faced some pressure here. But there was enough time for him to at least should be able to see Jermond McCoy falling back on this crosser. Will Brooks is over the top of it. Jermond McCoy is underneath it. Jermaine McCoy picks this off. Arian Carter there is ready to lead block on this thing, and it's returned to what was near the original line of scrimmage on the OU 48-yard line. We just didn't let them have it. And by the time that they got that Hawkins found – oh, gosh, I said his name already. By the time that Hawkins found – what's his name? Jaquez Pettaway on that 46-yard pass completion. It was almost too late at that point. Obviously, they kept it until the final possessions there. They needed two touchdowns and two PATs in order to make it a game. I think a lot of people, especially Norman, felt that it was over at that point. But for the most part, man, we just didn't allow the explosive play, which brings me back to the Tennessee side. I'm scrolling through Vol Twitter during commercial breaks and whatnot, and we're upset. We are clearly upset. What is with this conservative play caller? Hopple is in Norman. He should want blood, yada, yada, yada. Listen, let me tell you what this came down to. Yes, Hopple wanted blood, but Hopple was faced with a decision. You either are going to have to win this game this way, or you might not win this game at all. And he did what he had to do to win this game. I'm talking A-plus coaching job. He didn't go conservative. He did what he had to do. You need to consider this, Vol fans. You played without starting left tackle hurt. John Campbell goes down in the second quarter. Dane Davis has now played left tackle and right tackle in a situation he shouldn't have been really playing at all. Hurd was out. We knew that. Obviously, that's going to insert Davis. But then John Campbell goes down, and you enter in Larry Johnson. And so you're playing without Hurd, who I would like to think is going to eventually be a first-round pick. John Campbell, who is an extremely serviceable, who's going to be drafted. I'm not going to say first round. But nonetheless, Dane Davis was proven that he was struggling. So why would you continue with this lead to put the ball in the air? We saw what was happening. How many times can the defense turn that back around for you? It's just not realistic. It's almost not even realistic what actually happened and what the Tennessee defense did for us. But how many more times can the Tennessee defense do that? Don't think that's very realistic. So Heupel said, all right, time to put this thing on the ground. And even in some third and short situations, there was a screen to Squirrel White that was, I mean, yeah, it was conservative, but what, I mean, you're going to run it again? They ate it up, but take what they give you, okay? And maybe some Tennessee fans are looking at this going, golly, but we punted eight times. We punted eight times. You did what you had to do to win this game. It was really proving itself that Oklahoma, especially with Arnold, wasn't going to put a long drive together. And with this new kid, Hawkins, who the whole world was learning about, was he going to over and over again put long drives together? So we were playing field position. This is why we ran it on third and longs. I get it. It's not our normal MO. It's not our normal DNA. It's not who we usually are. It's not what we were doing in 22 with Hooker. I get that. But in this situation where this was an exchange of body blows and haymakers, in the end we landed more, and we just kind of jabbed away at this thing. A good example is the 8-play drive, 48-yard drive by Dylan Sampson. Put it on his back. Put it on his back. Pass pro was not going to be there for the offensive line. Obviously, you like what you have with Cooper and with Spraggins, but that's two. And you play with five. All right? We lulled them to sleep a little bit when we were able to kind of consistently move the chains on the ground. We took a shot deep. We didn't connect. I love the shot attempt. It pushes the safeties back again. It reminds the linebackers like, oh, shoot, they still might do this. They're not just going to run this thing out. In my mind, and in my thoughts and opinion, heck of a job by Heupel in doing what he had to do to win this game. Yes, he wanted blood. But it's even more important that he escapes Norman, Oklahoma, and I shouldn't even use the term escapes, that he leaves Norman, Oklahoma with the win, with a chalk mark in the win column, as opposed to, you know, maybe getting greedy or just being stubborn. This is what this is who we are. This is what Tennessee does. I think the only people who think that we live and die by the explosive play and by the deep ball and by, you know, the Hendon Hooker, Jalin Hyatt look situation, probably Tennessee fans. Heupel's going to tell you, we want to run the ball. This conference, this game is built and predicated on running the ball and stopping the run. It's what it comes down to. And Heupel did an excellent job in coaching this game. All right, I want to end this thing by giving out some game balls. Let's go with the offense first. You could even arguably give a game ball to Jackson Ross, 8 punts. Like, did anybody think he was going to punt 8 times in the year? Offense. I could have gone several ways. You could have gone Brew McCoy. You could have gone Dante when big plays are essential in this one. You could have gotten Nico, right? Had some situations where he escaped and found yards. You know, his passes, some of those things were elite. Numbers weren't great, but I mean, he obviously did enough for us to win. I'm going to land on Dylan Sampson here, though, who got off to a really, really slow start, could not find yards on the ground. His numbers do not just jump off to you. He's just shy of 100, 8 yards shy of 100 on 24 carries, so that's less than 4 yards per carry. But that 8 play, 8 rushes, I can never remember, 46, 48-yard drive, that was elite. And for the rest of the game, he managed to find yards when there wasn't grass. On his touchdown to close out that 8-play drive, it wasn't there. And Herb Street and Reese Davis salivated over the spin button comment. He did what he had to do to get the end zone. He found it. It made a way. And I thought he was really good in pass pro. Thought he was really good in pass pro when he was in. So props to Dylan Sampson, who is now getting really close to being halfway to the century mark on the season. And Tennessee's 4 games in. Tennessee's 4 games in. I thought Dylan Sampson did a lot to help us win this football game. And, you know, if you could give like a game ball 2.0, you might have to go to Sean Bishop, because when Sampson couldn't find it, Bishop did. Put that man on scholarship. Defense. There's a lot of places you could have gone defensively. A lot of places you could have gone defensively. My mind first went to Arian Carter, who led the team in tackles with 6, also had a tackle for loss. My mind went to Tyree West, who had a sack, who I believe, yeah, also had a tackle for loss. His tackle for loss, if I remember right, he was not the play side end. Play design was to the opposite side A-gap, and he had grass until Tyree West pops him from the side. This dude's turning into a baller for us. Almost wanted to go Tyree West. Joshua Josephs almost wanted to go there, who had a massive fumble and fumble recovery that I mentioned earlier. Really wanted to go him. Jermon McCoy, who I thought, let me think about this. Was he the best Tennessee secondary player on Saturday night? I mean, he was solid. And the thing that I like about this guy is he wants to hit you, which should remind you a little bit of Kamal Haddon, but McCoy's technique is far better. Haddon wanted to hit stick you. McCoy wants to hit you and bring you down. McCoy, if it feels like McCoy wants you down, but he wants you to feel it when you go down. Almost went him. But I landed. I'm gonna land on Keenan Peely, and part of this is because this dude's got a quicker step than I think any of us thought. He was never out of position. Ended up with 5 total tackles and a tackles for loss. When he had to be the force player, he did really great at that. This guy is. I don't think we knew what we got in Keenan Peely when we got him. And I just want to say this before I close this thing. His injury last year in the Virginia game, man, might be a hidden blessing for us. If he stays healthy that year, he's out of eligibility going into 24. How much of an impact would he had in 23? I think we obviously had a much lower ceiling. What a hidden blessing. I mean, I hate to say that, but man, I'm glad he's on this 24 squad. I'm so glad he's on this 24 squad. So I'm going to give my game boss to Dylan Sampson, and I'm going to give it to Keenan Peely, man. I thought it was awesome. Just also kind of in closing that we got to see Christian Charles in at safety. They rotated him what feels like every other driver or something like that in the second half. So good to see him back on the field. Obviously, if you know me, knew him personally in his time in high school. He was an inch away, man, from a sack. But Tennessee goes into Norman, flexes its muscles, and looks at Oklahoma and says, oh, this is the game that you want to play. We can do that. You want to slow us down? You want to play a time of possession game? Cool. Let's do that. Rolled up their sleeves and started exchanging blows. We hit more haymakers and we hit more jabs. And you could argue that this score should be even more different because you have that really debatable incomplete pass fumble situation. What was ruled a touchdown by Christian Harrison, but then wasn't. It was actually ruled an incomplete pass. I mean, that was just a whole fiasco. I think the whole world knows that that was a fumble picked up and returned by Christian Harrison. Whatever, though, man. I'll take it. We were penalized way more than they were. We ran well. We did enough putting the ball in the air. We did it without Lance Hurd and John Campbell. Did it without those guys. Cam Seldon was not halfback number two. It was Deshaun Bishop. Y'all, we're good. Tennessee is going to go into a bye week. All eyes are going to be on Alabama, Georgia. We're gonna get a bye week. We're going to hopefully get guys like Hurd healthy, going to get guys like Campbell healthy as we get ready to go on the road to Fayetteville, Arkansas. Just a quick little side note, Taylen Green kind of struggled with Auburn a little bit. They sat him, threw in this other kid, put him back out there. First game, he worried me a little bit. I'm excited for the bye week because my heart rate and blood temperature can go down. But, man, I cannot wait to watch the Vols go up to Fayetteville, Arkansas, and take on Sam Pittman and try to get a revenge game after that 2020 ridiculousness. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Appreciate you guys tuning in and subscribing and liking this video. By me saying that, that means that you're going to do it. A couple of our last episodes, especially my preview episode going to this one, that really blew up. And I just want to say thank you for that. A lot of views on that one, over 2,000. So thank you, thank you, thank you. If you're listening right here on podcast and you're not subscribed, do us a favor, man, and go hit like on this video and subscribe to the channel. And if you're watching on YouTube, do the same thing for Spotify and Apple Podcast and anywhere you can get your podcast. And just go give us a 5-star rating. Really, really looking forward to hearing Michael's episode on this. Again, we're going to keep coming to you solos. It's just a way for us right now in this season to put out more content, and this kind of seems to be the way that you guys like things, because you're telling us with your click rate and your likes. I love you guys. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I'm Dan. This is Pandemonium Reigns. God bless. Go Vols.
Pandemonium Reigns.